I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I've crossed the valleys fair, man. I've breathed the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man.
You see
I've
report.
Been everywhere.
Thank you, see report. Great, great. Yeah, well, here we are. Welcome, Amanda Waldman. It's so good to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So I've been doing a small mini series with state house candidates, and I think yours will be the last one before the election. So it's a real pleasure to have you on.
Wow.
And I'm wondering if we could just start by, if you could just explain where your district is, you know, what you're running for, and you know, the people that might be able to vote for you.
So my name is Amanda Waldman. I'm running in the 84th District State House race. The 84th District is Lycoming County and a small part of Union County. I have White Deer and Gregg Townships. So my district actually makes a donut shape. And the donut hole is the urban population center, Williamsport, South Williamsport, Loyal Sock, and Montgomery. So my district is very, very rural. A lot of farms, a lot of very small towns, small communities. Kind of an old school lifestyle here.
Yeah, if folks have been to swim at, what is it called again? Rock Run? Yeah, they've been in your district or went to... yeah, like Jersey Shore, right? Isn't Jersey Shore in your, yep.
Yep, Jersey Shore is in my district as well.
It's
Pine Creek, the Pine Creek Valley, Cascade, yeah.
it's stunningly beautiful part of central Pennsylvania, I have to say. Just, I'm sure it's amazing right now with the colors of the trees as the leaves change.
Fortunately, all the leaves are starting to fall off. It's really, you know, wake up call. Hey, Christmas is almost here. You know,
wow.
We're almost at the end. The election's almost up, and yeah, this year went by really fast.
It did go by very fast. I'm hoping you can explain to me, you know, like what are some central components to your platform? Like yours is a very rural district. It lacks sort of any sort of major anchoring area since it's a donut shaped, you know, but you've got prisons in your district, you've got fracking in your district, you've got, you know, small towns and small businesses and larger manufacturers as well. Could you explain to me, you know, like what policies are you running on and how are those informed by who lives in your district?
So a big concern, and I'm going to back up a moment. I was part of a group of candidates that had promoted something called the Rural Bill of Rights. And that's kind of the central tenets of rural PA, rural America. It encompasses everything from infrastructure and healthcare to the Constitution and the environment. I'm actually running on everything here. The reason that I'm running is our legislature hasn't really addressed the needs of rural America for a long time. Neither party. This isn't a partisan conversation. That's another thing. I'm not running on party politics. I'm running on the things that we've needed and we've needed for a long time. And nothing has happened with any of that.
Yeah, chief among those things that I think is really interesting is the need for like a really robust rural healthcare system, rural broadband, and some of these things. It just strikes me as so strange that we need to like say that, you know, we need this infrastructure here to live. You know, and it's striking to me that this is where we are in the conversation. And you know, where we are with this sort of discourse about rural resilience.
We all work together just fine. So I actually live on a part of my grandfather's farm. I bought the home that I grew up in. And this farm was part of my great-grandfather's farm. So it's been sold off and handed down to the family. When my grandfather passed away, he actually passed away of cancer. And when he was diagnosed, he sold off a portion of the farm. Of course, the family got, you know, the first opportunity to buy any land that they wanted. But then he sold a piece of it to a developer. So when I grew up, I didn't have neighbors, not close ones. You know, there were kids to play with, but, you know, I had to ride my bike a mile or so to go find someone to go do something with. Or walking through the woods, you know, to one aunt or another aunt's house to, you know, play with my cousins. And now I have a lot of neighbors and they're all really amazing people. And we, this year, we all got together and we did a socially distant Easter block party because we felt so bad. We couldn't have our families come over. We couldn't do the normal Easter morning. We didn't have our normal Easter morning church services. And it was just so disruptive for our kids and pretty upsetting for everyone. So we got together and we did a socially distant Easter party. Now, outside of an election cycle, I have no idea how any of my neighbors are registered to vote. We just all get along. We all talk to each other. We all talk about our jobs, our children, our schools, our pets, everything. And party politics doesn't matter ever in any of those conversations. If something bad happens to a family here, like when I lost my father, I spent the entire day with, you know, my two sisters, and I was not here at my home. I was, you know, between the hospital and the funeral home and my sister's house and my father's property. But when I came home, we had meals everywhere. There were cards, there were flowers. That's what a rural community does. That's what we do here. We're here for each other. And we don't care who you vote for president or who you voted for state rep. What we know is we're here for each other. And that's how our representatives should be acting. They should be here for their constituents. It shouldn't matter about a corporation needs this or a lobbyist is pushing for that. What should matter is that our farmers are facing really tough times with being able to get their product to market. You know, our citizens are struggling because we're not making a living wage, let alone a good wage that's worth our effort. Our property taxes are sky high and they're gonna continue to climb. I'm afraid to see what our next bill for property taxes next year is gonna be. We have no oversight on charter schools. We don't even know which charter schools our personal school districts are using when our kids can't be in the classroom. Rural broadband. Our kids had to come home last March. My son is still home. And we don't have reliable enough internet. I'm working from home. You know, there's so many things that could have been addressed. And they could have been addressed a long time ago. It didn't need to take a crisis for people to act. Our small businesses, our restaurants, our mall is almost completely closed. All of those stores went out of business because people don't have money to spend. It's not just Amazon. It's not just Google. It's not just Etsy. We don't have the money. So of course we're going to bargain shop wherever we can. And if that means we found a better deal on Amazon, then that's where we buy from. Problem is Amazon doesn't contribute to taxes here. If they're not paying taxes to the country, let alone to the individual states where they sell products in, you know, that's just more for us, the taxpayer, to pick up. And that's what's been happening in Pennsylvania. In rural PA, the closest place to a hospital would be in the town of Hughesville and Muncie or in Mentorsville. But for me here in the middle of, you know, the mountain, it's a 30-minute drive you know, that's to the bigger hospital, to the small hospital, if it's urgent, but it's not a life-threatening emergency, that's a 20-minute drive. You know, and I'm fortunate in Lycoming County, we have four hospitals. So, well, the fourth one is just being built now. It'll be a trauma one center through Geisinger. Issues like that. And in some of the other rural districts, having to drive 30, 40 minutes, you have to keep in mind how long it's going to take for an ambulance to get to you as well. They have to get to you to pick you up in an emergency and then drive that same 30, 35, 40 minutes to a hospital. It's amazing that anyone makes it there alive, and that's just through the pure skill of EMS drivers, you know, and our ambulance and our paramedics. So none of these issues had to become such a huge problem. And had any of our elected officials really focused on rural communities, this wouldn't have been an issue. These wouldn't be such hot button topics.
Yeah, I mean, so something that I think is really interesting is, though, because our state legislature does have kind of a rural bias, I think, because there's a lot of legislators that come from our rural areas, but we've seen very little movement. Especially basically the last 12 or 13 years, from the beginning of Corbett through Tom Wolf, we've basically seen no movement at all.
Exactly.
And why do you think that is? Like, why do you think that we've had such gridlock in Harrisburg? Because some of these things that you're talking about really aren't, partisan. You know, everybody needs a hospital. Regardless of how much money you make, you know, if you lived on the mountain, you know, it's still a 30-minute drive. You know, they're not going to send a helicopter. Why do you think that these things have been like so stagnated?
So, what I've noticed a lot of, probably for the past 5 or 6 years, there is a whole lot of childish behavior in government on the whole. There's stomping of feet, raising of voices, shaking of fists, pounding of fists, and finger pointing and blaming someone else, all based on party politics. We all have the same goals. We all have ideas on how to address them. So it's time to grow up. Stop throwing your two-year-old tantrum. Like, that's a level of irresponsibility.
I mean, like,
that is just not familiar.
They must be doing that because they feel like it benefits them, or they're somehow rewarded by it. What is it?
The shock value. I mean, it's just like reality TV. It's just like our 24-hour news cycle. You sensationalize this behavior. You gain more support with certain groups of people. You lose support with other groups of people. The fact remains, you're not being an adult and you're not working together and you're not finding the solutions for the people that you're supposed to be representing and you're supposed to be passing legislation for. And that's all it is. That's what it comes down to, is this inability to be civil and to act like an adult in public. I don't watch the 24-hour news cycle. On occasion, I'll get to catch my local news. Otherwise, I will listen to NPR, specifically Smart Talk, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. I will read the newspaper. I will read online newspapers. But I try and not listen to talking heads. And I tend to stay a lot calmer, and I see an opportunity. I hear both sides of arguments and conversations. And I see that there are clear things that we could be focusing on that we have in common, and that these ideas are not necessarily in opposition. They're very complementary. And if someone would just sit down and work together, we'd have some really great legislation, some very forward-thinking legislation. But nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to be accused of being a traitor to their party, or, you know, working against the party machine. To me, it's just disgusting.
I really like interviewing state representative candidates because you guys have like a really good ability. Like it's like a small enough amount of people that you can actually really talk with a lot of people, and people like yourself, you know, it sounds like you're like a third generation 84th district person.
Seventh generation.
Seventh. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So you like really have a beat for what people are thinking. And you know, not just Democrats, but Republicans and independents and, you know, everybody in the middle.
I'm not a bad neighbor, but I'm a really terrible politician.
Well, so like, let's say you get in there, and what is going to be the first thing that you really try and work on that will get like 60 or 70% of the district behind it? Like what have you found that it's something everybody can agree on?
Property taxes are too high. So that's my first focus, tax reform in general. You can't reform just one piece of our tax structure without affecting the entire thing. So right now there's proposal Senate Bill 76 to eliminate and significantly reduce property tax. This bill is a horrible piece of legislation. It involves raising our personal income tax rates, and it involves increasing the state the state sales tax. Both of those things are regressive taxes. They're regressive because they disproportionately affect working families, the middle class, and lower income. Because those groups of people, myself included, we have a much smaller amount of discretionary funds. So right now we struggle to pay our basic needs, our electric, water, sewer, food. And heaven forbid if someone in the family is sick or you have a prescription, such as insulin. We don't have the extra money now, but you want to raise the tax on the amount of money that we make and on the items that we purchase. And they want to increase the number of items that can be purchased. So right now, food and clothing are exempted. As long as it's not prepared food, they're exempted from a sales tax. So are diapers, you know, personal necessary items. They want to add diapers. They want to add over-the-counter medications. So that's just one of the reasons. Two, we're sending all of the money that goes to our local municipality to Harrisburg to be redistributed back to our municipality. So our municipality loses the autonomy over the funds raised. We're making government that much bigger. And I think that the state government is plenty big enough. I think it's very inefficient. I know I'm not alone in thinking that. So why would I want an entire another department created just to handle the increase in sales tax and the increase in the income tax, taking away all of our local ability to put the funds where we actually need them, because we know what we need best here in rural PA.
I mean, I don't know why yeah. Wouldn't just.
I'm sure you can tell, like, this is one of the things that I'm really passionate about. It is our tax structure. We have a flat tax rate. It is also regressive. There's so many things in place that hurt everyday residents here.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like, why we don't just eliminate the Delaware loophole and then get rid of the property tax and then just have, you know, everything stays the same except that huge corporations have to pay their fair share. Well, you know,
I and think our tax laws, the number of loopholes. So the Delaware tax loophole is an issue, definitely. We can fix that by passing, I believe it's Senator Muth has legislation she's been working on for requiring combined reporting. So you still, whatever you make here in Pennsylvania, you still have to report here. And you can report it in Delaware to your, you know, P.O. box.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the state of Delaware. But you still have to pay a portion of that here. That doesn't seem like it should be difficult. But this is another one of those, you know, yell and stomp our feet and shake our finger. Our corporations made money through COVID. Billionaires are how much richer through COVID. But what happened to the regular citizens here? We are struggling. We lost our jobs. We just had a business in Williamsport shut down. Overnight, 400 people were laid off. Overnight. They had no warning.
It's awful.
Clearly, giving them corporate tax breaks is not keeping them here in Pennsylvania. It's not increasing our jobs. We have Keystone Opportunity Zones. Most of them sit empty. They have one or two small businesses in them. But that's not what they were meant for. So clearly our plan is not working. We're not attracting the new business we needed to. And it's time to take another look at how we've planned things. You now have evidence it's not working. What else can we do? And there is zero reason that a Republican and a Democrat and an independent can't sit down with people who are involved in this actual, you know, in the issues themselves that have real experience. We're not asking for expertise enough, but there's zero reason we can't sit down and figure it out.
So. Yeah. I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. And on your website and in some of your campaign materials, you talk about the importance of having like a diverse legislature. And then specifically you talk about why it's important to elect people like yourself that work for a living, you know, and are from the area and know what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck. If you could just expand on that and just, you know, why should we elect a diverse legislature?
It goes to that comment about expertise. So we pass legislation on education. We cut their funding budgets and expect them to figure it out. Well, the obvious result is that we're going to lose the types of courses. You know, you're going to lose your music, you're going to lose your art, you're going to lose your electives. Those are the first things to get cut. You're going to lose social services where you can in a school if they're not already mandated. And the property taxes are still going to go up on the residents. Had we spoken to the school board association, had we spoken to the state education association, had we talked to teachers, the same with COVID and shutting down the schools and having this rural broadband issue, had we talked to people who do this every day, we would have had a better handle on everything. Talking to small businesses, okay, we created grants and PPE funds and that's wonderful. And it was definitely necessary. But there's a hospital here that got $51 million of that money. How many small businesses could have been helped with that? And why does a hospital need extra funds during a pandemic? Just, you know, rhetorical question. So it's things like that. It's common sense to ask people who do this daily, who understand what it's like on the inside. That applies to people in the legislature. The state representative's position was specifically created not for the wealthy to take. It was supposed to be for the people who live here and do go through all of the same motions every day. It's supposed to be for regular people. And that way you can ensure regular people stay represented. That hasn't been happening. It's been an increase for a very, very long time into people with money. Campaigns are insanely expensive to run. Mine is very, very low budget. I don't take money from PACs and I don't take money from lobbyists and I rarely talk to lobbyists, honestly. It's not that I don't want to hear them, I'm gonna take that back. I don't want any undue influence on myself. the decisions that need to be made in Harrisburg at the in the state house need to be made by the people in the district. So my sole focus is the people in the district. And if they have a dollar or $2 that they want to donate, wonderful. I'm not going to take $500, $1,000, $2,500 from a large group because you're not my constituents. You're not the people that need your voice amplified in Harrisburg. The people are.
Yeah, and going off that, like, what was it? Did you have like a aha moment where you decided to put your name forward to run for office? Like, was it, or was it like a culmination of things?
I'm very feisty. I've got a mom voice that I'm not afraid to use. And I don't know that there was a specific moment. I do remember I woke up, I think it was February 6th. I woke up that morning and I was like, why don't I run? I had just gone to a women's dinner. It was Women 2.0. And I had asked if there was anyone running, you know, for Garth's open seat. This was a perfect year. Yeah. Someone should run. First response was, well, no one's running, but why don't you?
Yeah, that's great.
Second response was, no, I don't think anyone's even considering it. You know what? You should really run. And the third one, oh my gosh, you would be great. You should run. And I was like, you're all crazy. I was in Harrisburg. I don't ever want to go back. I worked there in 2008 for Lieutenant Governor Knoll. And I got to see a very insider look into what actually happens that the vast majority of the public have no idea. And I was disgusted. I came away with very few people to respect, to admire. And I thought, I'm going to be active in the community. And then, yeah, the next morning I wake up and I was like, you know what? Why don't I run? I'm one of the people. I'm a single parent. I know what we're struggling with. The issues are the issues that keep me awake every night. They're the issues that I have every time I sit down at the kitchen table and write out my bills. Every paycheck, I'm like, how much do I have left over this one? You know, and that, and I was pretty angry at the same time. Yeah. I'm angry at the childishness, and I'm angry that I'm being taxed and I have no effective representation. So maybe it was it's a Tea Party, the Boston Tea Party moment. Maybe that's my aha moment, but that's how it feels. I pay my taxes, I do my fair share, I've worked multiple jobs all at the same time. I've always focused on helping people. And I've always focused on being responsible, taking responsibility for my actions, fixing the things that need fixed.
Yeah, it's truly infuriating to see the number of good legislation that comes forward, like paid family leave insurance fund that they want to establish, or the gift ban, or the prescription drug oversight board, you know, things that would like really have a sizable impact on everybody, but especially working people. And just to see it so stymied and not go forward, and it's so frustrating with the process. And I haven't had the same experience like you, you know, seeing how the sausage is made, so to speak. But I mean, I can only imagine. I've seen House of Cards. but it's just it's so infuriating to see that and just to not see any action. So thank you for stepping up.
No, I don't know if I need thanks for that, but
yeah.
We need someone who's willing to work, and that's what I'm willing to do.
And tell me about your campaign. So you decide on February 4th, let's say, and did you get a lot of support from the community? And a lot of people have done a lot of things on Zoom these days. Yeah. I would imagine the whole thing was upended.
Well, it was funny because I went to the county Democratic meeting, like, that Wednesday. And I was like, hi. So I think I'm going to run for the state rep seat to the 84th district. And the whole room went dead silent. And they all went, what? They're like, hi, who are you? And then everyone just, boom, everyone jumped into action. So the Lycoming Women Dems, the Democratic, the county committee, Union County Democrats, the progressive groups, I mean, everyone just jumped in. And they've all done everything they could. So the Lycoming County Women's Group, they actually raised the money for all of the billboards, like through the entire county. Union County. Yeah, they raised money and they did billboards for all the candidates. The candidates, we created a coalition, the Rural Pennsylvania Democratic Coalition. We found getting help from the state party, and I'm not going to slam the state party. I understand, like, our districts are hard to win. We're in very, very red areas. The problem with that mentality is that the people in this area all feel the same way, regardless of party. We've been ignored. We're not getting what we need. So they, you know, everyone jumped in, and I don't even know how I'm going to possibly thank everyone who's volunteered, who's donated, who's made calls, who's just jumped in and done whatever they could.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a chicken and egg problem, because I do think that if the parties invested more money here, you know, because I mean, maybe I'm just partial because I know the people of Central Pennsylvania, and I know that if we had like better opportunities to put our best foot forward, I think they would support us. And so that's why, you know, I just love to see candidates like yourself that are like doing their best to represent working people in the Valley and in Greater Susquehanna Valley in Central PA. And I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Questions that I've been asking everybody that I've interviewed. The first one is, what have you learned that surprised you while you've run for office?
I don't know that I'm really surprised by a lot. I did have a moment where I was making phone calls, and the woman called me an Antifa-loving Nazi.
Wow.
And that was my surprising moment. I went, and my brain just instantly froze. And I mean, like, she hung up, of course, and I was like, I've never heard that combination of phrases together. I'm really confused. And I've never met this person. I talk to everyone. I always have. I'm a very social person. So seeing that just based on a party, like, I knew that it was divisive, and I knew that the rhetoric is horrible around political parties. And I try and stay above that and ignore party politics as much as possible. I mean, obviously I'm registered as a Democrat because there are things on their platform that I identify with more so than on the Republican platform. There are also things in the Republican platform that I identified with over, you know, the Democratic platform. So people say that makes me a true independent, but because of that letter behind my name, some people feel that level of animosity towards me. So I guess that has to be probably the most shocking.
Yeah, that is a shocking thing to encounter. Yeah.
And margins that shocked me. That there's another wake up thing, completely campaign related. Margins. I'd never heard this phrase before. I've never been on the inside of a political campaign. I've never helped another candidate. Mike Rafferty for mayor. I think I was an exit poller, but I don't even remember the year. I think he ran for mayor in Williamsport. But that's literally it. So I'd never heard the term margins before, and I hear it all the time.
The second question that I've been asking everybody is, what have you been reading?
Okay.
Or watching on Netflix.
no watching. I don't have time for that. So I read, one of my staff gave me this book. It's called The American Citizen in Pennsylvania.
Oh.
It's old. It's from 1902.
Wow.
It was a school book. This is what I read just to remind myself why I'm running, because some days I do need that pick me up. And this goes back to the Constitution and to the founding of the country. And I mean, this is the unwashed history. And then to turn my brain off at night to go to sleep, I've been reading the Ghost at a Watchman.
Oh.
War and Peace, when my brain is really, really
just to turn off.
Someday I will get through War and Peace, and I'll remember all the characters eventually. I just finished Tom Brokaw's The Greatest Generation. I look back through my history books. I have a degree in English, so I have a plethora of books at my disposal, and I'll just pick anything off the shelf and just start reading. So
cool. And then the final question is, how can people connect with your campaign?
They can connect with me on Facebook. They can go to my website, waldmanforthe84th.org. My business cards, I actually have my own personal phone number, against the advice of everyone that's ever run for office. That's my phone number. I've had that phone number for decades. Not going to change it. So email, you can email waldmanforthe84th@gmail.com. Pick up the phone and call me. Join me on a Monday night on Facebook, on Zoom. I make myself available anytime, anywhere. Constituents can pop on, they can call, whatever. I'm also out actually canvassing. So,
very good.
New one for the year.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, Amanda. It was great to talk with you and good to connect.
Yeah, thanks, Taylor. Really appreciate the opportunity. Share, man, I've been everywhere.